Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's story, The Man Who Touched the Stars, was written by Sigmund Miller. Leon Janney is featured as Solomon. The narrator is Bernard Lenro.
In old Spain of the 11th century, there lived one of the greatest poets of Israel. His name was Solomon ibn Gebirol. He was a frail, lonely, and troubled youth. But inside him, truth burned with an incandescent flame, so fiercely that no one could come too close to him. But Solomon could touch the stars at will, even when he was 14.
Ah, my friend Simeon. Shalom.
Shalom, Judah.
I pray you sit down.
Thank you.
I imagine you wish to talk to me about my son Solomon.
Your son and my student.
Is it a compliment or a complaint?
Well, in a way, it's a complaint. Not a bad one, but a complaint.
He's not neglecting his studies, is he?
Oh, no. He'll be as great a scholar as yourself, Judah. But you know, one who glories in himself lowers his own position.
You will have to speak more to the point, Simeon. What did Solomon do?
Well, he wrote a poem. A very good poem, I admit.
You will have to admit a great deal more to make me understand what your complaint is about.
I have the poem here. Let me read it to you.
Please do.
I open the gates of knowledge and understanding. I gather stray phrases into strings of thought, and from scattered words I collect pearls of wisdom. I penetrate into places closed even to men of understanding, and sing songs that make the soul rejoice and deliver the heart from sorrow. I am the master singer, and song is my slave. Though I be but 14, I have the wisdom of a man of 40. That is the poem.
I see. You feel that perhaps it boasts too much.
Well, a boy of 14 should develop a bit of modesty.
A boy of 14 or a man of 40, both.
And there's one more thing. The man of 40 in the poem refers to me. You see, I once told him that he didn't have the wisdom of a man of 40 like myself.
Well, Simeon, I'll talk to Solomon about this.
You understand, I don't have any animosity towards the boy. None at all. After all, it is written in the Talmud that the only ones who do not envy a brilliant student are his teachers and his father.
I'm sure you don't envy him. Oh, Simeon.
Yes?
It's not bad poetry for a lad of 14.
Excellent. Very excellent. He might even become a well-known poet someday.
The same evening, Judah ibn Gebirol took the matter up with his son Solomon. When he came upon Solomon in his room, the boy was completing a poem.
Father, I didn't know you were here.
I didn't want to interrupt you. Genius must come before respect for the elders. What are you writing, Solomon?
I've written a poem. Would you like to hear it?
I would, very much.
It's a little rough, but, well, for since my youth, in wisdom's course I labor. To shining wisdom, to her must I ascend. She is my sister, my childhood chum, my neighbor. And of all men, she must choose me, her friend. There's an extra beat in the third line. I'll have to get rid of a syllable. How do you like it, Father?
It's a good poem. Unusual poem. You say something about since my youth. I did not know that your youth was gone.
I'm 14. I'm a man. I think like a man.
Yes, I know. In one of your poems, you said you have as much wisdom as a man of 40. How much wisdom is a man of 40 supposed to have?
An older man has had more time to gather wisdom than a younger man.
Man is only wise during the time he searches for knowledge. If he imagines that he has completely attained it, he is not wise at all. But I would like to talk to you about Simeon, your teacher. He seems disturbed at your lack of modesty.
Modesty is only self-shame. I am ashamed of nothing, Father. I am proud of what I am, what I write, and do. I think my teacher Simeon is vexed with me because he writes poor poetry. He is a man without talent as a teacher or writer.
I don't know whether that is true or not. Nevertheless, you must be circumspect, and you must not say such things.
But they are true.
Even so, you must not antagonize people.
My own teacher, Simeon, has taught me that one should not fear the truth. I do not fear it. Why should he?
Truth is like fire. It warms some people and burns others. You must be careful not to burn anyone.
I believe in truth. If it will make enemies, then let it do so. I am not afraid of truth and people or kings.
Well, my son, perhaps you will have to learn caution and prudence the hard way.
But this was the mold of Solomon Ibn Gabiro. He pursued truth, and he said what was in his heart. This precocious boy grew into a sensitive and delicate young man. When he was 20, he met a beautiful young girl called Naomi. She had jet-black hair and flashing brown eyes, and Solomon loved her from the very first moment.
You are lovely tonight. Lovelier than a spring eventide.
Yes, Solomon, tell me more.
When I dream of you, Naomi, I am wide awake. And when I'm wide awake, I dream of you. When I close my eyes, I see your bewitching brown eyes. Wherever I am, wherever I go, you stand always before me.
You really do love me, Solomon.
As I love my own soul. Because of you, sweet Naomi, I see beauty in everything I see. Tell me that you love me too, Naomi.
I do, Solomon, I do.
To what degree do you love me?
With all my heart.
Then we are pledged to each other.
We are pledged.
I have written a poem, Naomi.
For me, Solomon?
Not to you exactly, but you have inspired me. You have made me, through love for you, appreciate God.
Do you have the poem with you? May I see it?
I carry the poem with me wherever I go. Listen to it, Naomi. Thou art one, the first of every number, and the foundation of every structure. Thou exist, but the how has no sway over thee, nor the wherefore and whence. Thou livest, but not through breath and soul, for thou art soul of the soul. Thou art wise, the fountainhead of all wisdom. Thou drawest up films of being from nothingness. Thou hast formed man from a pinch of clay and breathed into him a soul, and imparted to him a spirit of wisdom, whereby man is divided from the beasts, that he may ascend to a higher sphere. Thou hast warmed him with the gift of love.
That is beautiful, Solomon.
It is you who helped me write it. It is you, Naomi, who makes of me the best of me.
But as time went on, Naomi got to know another young man, Noah, and she compared the two. Noah came of a rich family. He was easy to get along with and never said things that hurt her deeply as Solomon did. Noah was healthy, sturdy, and full of humor. True, Noah did not love her as passionately as Solomon, but he loved her well enough.
Let us walk to the river's edge, Naomi. I would like to see the moonbeams on the river.
I'd rather go to the garden square of roses.
Let it be the square, then.
If you really prefer to walk to the river, Solomon...
No, we'll go to the square of roses.
But you just said you wanted to go to the river.
You changed my mind.
We're beginning to quarrel again.
Not we, but you. You are deliberately seeking a quarrel.
You're being very rude, Solomon.
You are in love with Noah, that muddle-headed...
He is not muddle-headed.
His father has sent him to the best school in Malaga and Saragossa. yet he can barely write an intelligible letter.
You hardly know him, Solomon. You mustn't talk about anyone you know so little about.
Then let us talk about you. I know you very well. You have decided to marry Noah, but you have not the courage to tell me.
I haven't made any decisions.
Spare yourself the embarrassment of telling me something you know I don't believe. Perhaps you love me more, Naomi, but Noah will make the better husband, the better father. Noah will never tell you the truth if it hurts you. I will. Noah will lie to you whenever necessary. I never. If you are shallow, I will say that you are shallow. And if you are beautiful, I will say you are beautiful.
Well, I still want to think...
Naomi, look at me.
Yes?
Now tell me. Only words from your heart can reach my heart. Tell me.
Yes. I think I will marry Noah.
I'm glad you told me so directly. And now there will be no more argument between you and me. And from now on, we will go our separate ways. You did not understand me at all. For when I spoke to you of love, I also spoke with truth. And when I spoke the truth to you, I also spoke with love. Farewell, beautiful Naomi. And farewell to a strange and beautiful dream I had of you.
Solomon! Solomon, wait!
That night he walked to the river's edge alone, and there sat down and watched the moonbeams gleam on the dark waters. And in his bitterness, a poem welled up in him like the tears that welled up in his eyes.
Lord, what is man? A carcass, fouled and trodden. A noxious creature, brimming with deceit. A fading flower that shrivels with the heat. Lord, what is man? A lonely creature, driven. Like fallen leaves, he falls in a heap. His stroke comes sudden, and he falls on sleep.
Then Solomon's beloved father died, and he was left without a family. And now, for the first time in his life, Solomon Ibn Gabirol lived alone, and he did not thrive. In this evil, lonely moment of his life, he chanced to cross the path of one Yekutiel, a powerful political figure in Saragossa.
So you are Solomon Ibn Gabirol.
That's my name, Yekutiel.
You're the brilliant young poet who has insulted all the rich and second-rate minds of our fair city.
Not insulted, but told them the truth.
You should know the truth is the greatest insult to mankind.
I don't know that. Truth is a never-ending ladder that reaches to the stars. If you climb high enough on this ladder, you can touch the stars.
Hmm. Most of the people in Saragossa don't even know there are stars in the sky. Anyway, Solomon, you've made almost as many bitter enemies here in our city as I have. You need to protect yourself.
I am not afraid of them.
I know that, but still you need protection. Now, how would you like to come and live with me?
With you?
I have a fine home, largest library in Saragossa, and plenty of money, which I do not plan to take with me after I die. You will be safe at my home, for I have a constant armed guard, and you can write at leisure about anything you please, even evil things about me, if you so fancy.
You will learn to dislike me in a short time.
Perhaps not. We may quarrel, but we certainly won't find each other dull. I will be your patron, and you will repay me with great poetry. Is it a pact?
Yes, Yekutiel.
I say that's absurd. People are not born fools. They make themselves so after they are born.
You're wrong, Yekutiel. A fool inherits his foolishness from his ancestors.
Nonsense. The characteristics of a fool are of such a nature that they can only develop after he is born.
If you look at a fool, you find that he is much like his father or grandfather. You will find that he aspires to a position for which he is not fitted. He cannot distinguish friend from foe.
That's neither here nor there, Solomon.
Another characteristic of a fool is that he answers before he hears.
Are you calling me a fool?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Please stop this bickering. You are both fools to argue over such nonsense.
My good wife, this is a matter between men. Now, you called me a fool, Solomon, and you said I was so only in this instance.
Please, let
that
us go
is
into
what
dinner.
I
Did
well, if I was a fool in only this instance, I was not a fool in another instance, or when I was born. Then I did not inherit my foolishness. I acquired it. You defeat your own argument, Solomon.
That was merely a figure of speech. You are an arrogant man, Yekutiel. A man who must always have his own way.
Nevertheless, I'm not a fool in this instance or any other. And you, Solomon, are a better poet than a logician.
And you, Yekutiel, are a politician, devious in thought and word.
Please. The dinner is getting cold.
Nevertheless, these two men loved each other. Although they argued and squabbled, they respected each other and every day became closer friends. Solomon found peace and happiness here until one day.
Solomon. Solomon.
What is it, Deborah?
Yekutiel.
What's the matter? Tell me.
Slain. They murdered my poor husband.
Not since the death of his beloved father had Solomon known such grief. Perhaps this loss was even greater, for Solomon had lost his only friend in a world that had become friendless to him. And now Solomon could no longer remain in Saragossa. He had brought about the hatred of too many people in high positions by his outspoken and devastating opinions. Without the protection of Yekutiel, his life was in great danger. He fled in the night and came to the city where Samuel Hanagid, the famous poet, was Grand Vizier, the city of Granada.
Who wrote this poem, Joseph?
Some unknown young writer, my Lord Samuel.
What's his name?
Solomon Ibn Gabirl.
Who is he, Joseph?
I don't know, my Lord.
How then did this poem reach me?
It is my belief he sent it here to attract your attention, knowing that you are a great poet.
Read the poem to me again.
Yes, my Lord. O inhabitants of homes of clay, why lift ye such a swelling eye? Ye are but beasts that die. What do you boast of more than they? Behold, no jot with thee will stay of all the glory now so great. Strangers shall seize thy loved estate, and empty thou shalt go away.
He is a great poet. I should like to meet him.
I know where he can be found, my Lord.
Well, then, see if you can have him visit me. He sounds rebellious, sensitive, and very talented. I'm curious to see what he looks like.
Most eminent grace, my Lord Samuel Hanagid, Grand Vizier of Granada, may I present Solomon Ibn Gabirl, a poet.
Step forward, Solomon.
I am honored, my lord.
Leave us alone, Joseph. I would like to talk to him alone.
Yes, my lord.
I have read your poem. Extraordinarily good.
Which poem was that, my lord?
The one in which you threatened me that eventually I will die and that strangers shall seize thy loved estate and empty thou shalt go away.
You are mistaken, my lord. I never threatened you. The poem wasn't directed at you or anyone in particular. It was directed at any vain man of power. But if you consider yourself also vain, then indeed the poem is directed at you, my lord.
You're a spirited poet, anyway. You talk your mind, whether it be the Grand Vizier or the Emir. How old are you, Solomon?
I am 22.
22? Well, one should have learned discretion before then.
I am a poet, my lord. One cannot be discreet and a poet at the same time. A poet must deal with truth and live with truth.
Nevertheless, to live in this world, you must walk carefully, say things carefully, and hand out truth most carefully. In a world full of sensitive kings and viziers and noblemen and men of power, you must be careful what you say. The stumbling of a foot is healed in a short time, but the stumbling of a tongue may lose a man his head.
I am not frightened, my lord.
No, you are not frightened. But you must admit it's easier to retract what you did not say than what you did say.
I have no need to make retractions. Understand me, my lord. I am not being vain about my adoration of truth. This is the way I am. This is the way a poet should be. For a poet lifts men higher, and a poet's strength to lift is through the power of truth. A poet is a judge of men, all men, including kings and viziers. To be a good poet is perhaps a dangerous profession. Nevertheless, such a man am I.
Well, Solomon, I find you brave and stimulating, and I have a feeling that you are a truly great poet. You have made a friend of the vizier.
The friendship of the grand vizier or the king, though it conferred dignity and honor, is like a high mountain upon which there are all varieties of beautiful fruit, but also all species of savage beasts. The ascent is laborious, and to remain upon it still worse. Rather would I be the friend of Samuel Hanagid the poet than Samuel Hanagid the grand vizier.
Well, I say to you, from Samuel the poet to Solomon the poet, we are well met. We are now brothers and companions.
We are brothers and companions.
These two great poets became great friends. Solomon became the ward of Samuel Hanagid, the grand vizier, who supported and encouraged and protected him as if he were truly his own brother. And Solomon needed protection, for the court of the grand vizier throbbed with gossip, innuendos, evasions, subterfuges, and cunning speech, and truth was nowhere to be found. But of all the scheming people at the court, none was closer to the grand vizier than Joseph. He watched with envy the rapidly growing friendship between the vizier and Solomon ibn Gebirol, and contrived to become an intimate companion of Solomon's. He beguiled and encouraged him to be his confidant, and Solomon trusted him.
Ha ha! You should have seen the emir. His face was red with laughter, and the visiting caliph was pale with embarrassment. But my lord Samuel saved the day. He deliberately turned over a bottle of wine on his new tunic, so that all the attention was drawn to him.
Samuel is a most skillful diplomat.
He is that. And he writes fairly good poetry, doesn't he?
It is much better than fair.
Oh, yes, yes, much better than fair. But didn't you once say it lacked something?
If anything, it lacks warmth. But it's still great poetry.
The emir doesn't seem to care for the vizier's poetry.
The emir cares for nothing except food and horses. He keeps getting fatter with each passing month. He has doubled the household tax and the grape tax so that he can gorge his family and buy more horses. Soon there will be no horse in all Spain capable of standing up under his weight. If he spent some of his time in reading the vizier's poetry instead of eating, perhaps affairs in Granada might be better.
The glorious emir is not really that fat, is he?
The emir indeed has covered himself with glory. He will go down in memory of Spain as the man who taxed his state into poverty, as the plumpest, softest emir in all history.
And Joseph carefully let it be known throughout the court what Solomon thought of Samuel's poetry and his opinion of the reigning emir. And when the story was in full blaze at the court, he also went and told Samuel Hanagid.
Sit down, Solomon.
Your messenger said it was urgent. Is there anything wrong, Samuel?
Don't you like it here at my court?
I like it very well, Samuel.
I think not. I think you're anxious to leave.
Whoever informed you of this lies.
Is it also a lie that you think my poetry is chilly, or that the emir will go down in history as the man who taxed his state into poverty? That he is the softest, plumpest emir of them all? Are these lies?
No. They are not lies. Joseph has goaded me into saying these things so that he could betray me. Even though I be outspoken, I honor you more than anyone in the court.
I know that, Solomon, and I forgive you. But everyone in court knows what you said about the emir and myself. You will have to make a public retraction.
Public retraction. Why, I can't. I can't debase myself.
There is no other way.
Well, it is a bitter thing to do, but I will.
You're being very wise.
Yes, my lord.
I'm still Samuel to you. You need never call me my lord. Do you really think my poetry is chilly?
Yes. But I still think you are one of the greatest poets of our time. And I will make the necessary retraction before the court.
There, hold, devoted companions of the Grand Vizier. Blessed be his name. I summon up one Solomon Ibn Gabirl, a poet who would say to you a matter of importance.
There always comes in each man's life a day of reckoning, when he is faced with carrying out the things he has always believed in. I came here to apologize and deny the truth. My heart and my soul refuse to allow me to do this. I said that the emir is a tyrant, a man who has overtaxed his people in order to fill his stables with more horses and his larder with more food. This no honest man can deny. And if I said that the emir is the fattest ruler in history, you need only look at him to see that I do not exaggerate. An apology from me will not make the emir slender. The truth can only do good, and only to good people. But those who oppose the truth, they will find that it is mighty and will forever prevail.
Solomon Ibn Gabirl died before he was 30, with the flame of truth still burning in him. And no one would come close to this flame. And when he died, his only friend was God. Like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Man Who Touched the Stars, was written by Sigmund Miller. The music was composed by Morris Mimorski and conducted by Milton Catons. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured as Solomon Ibn Gabirl was Leon Janney. The narrator was Bernard Lenro. The entire production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC. The National Broadcasting Company.